Welcome to the PANS Online Hui Series in partnership with Auckland Live and supported by Creative New Zealand and The Big Idea. These regular online gatherings for the arts, cultural and creative communities in Aotearoa are a chance to gather remotely, connect and get up to date. These sessions were recorded live on the dates listed in the episode description. Tēnā koutou katoa, nō mai, haere mai and welcome to the 8th online hui hosted by PANS in Auckland Live. Ko te lina wehi peihana tōku ingoa he uri aho no Ngāti Tukorehe, me Ngāti Raukawa. It's my pleasure to be here this morning to facilitate this hui as we discuss level one and what's happening out there during this time. I'd like to begin our session with a karakia. Me karakia tātou. Tū tawa mai I runga, tū tawa mai I raro. Tū tawa mai I roto, tū tawa mai I waho. Kia tau ai te mauri tū, te mauri ora ki te katoa, haumia hui e, taiki e. So here we are at level one, and a huge congratulations and ngā mihi to all of you for making it through the lockdown and for the incredible situation we find ourselves in here where we have no COVID cases currently in the country, a huge difference to what is happening in other places overseas. So now we're here in level one. We have no restrictions on gatherings, so we are good to go. Or are we? Our arts industry really ground to a halt. How quickly are we really able to get back going? Plus, we've acknowledged that there is no going back to the way things were before. We are all seeking a new normal. With all the issues that rose to the surface, the beautiful reflections and thoughts that have been shared in our hui over the last 2 months, how are we readjusting our practices as artists and organisations, and exactly how do we reopen, start presenting or performing or touring again? I'm joined by three brilliant panellists this morning representing venues and companies from Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch. We'd love to hear from you also during the panel. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to share with our panellists, please do enter them into the comments. And our wonderful team behind the scenes, Louise, Heather and Helena, will collate those for us and I can ask those questions to our panellists. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome our first panellist this morning, Anna Cameron. Anna Cameron is the Executive Director of Auckland Theatre Company. She hails from Whangarei and has 28 years of experience in the New Zealand arts sector. Anna has held a variety of roles across the arts and creative industries. Before relocating to Auckland in 2016 to take up a role in the Arts and Culture Unit at Auckland Council, Anna was resident in Wellington for 14 years. She was the head of programming at the New Zealand International Arts Festival, the manager of public programs and education at City Gallery, and she worked at the British Council, semi-permanent, and was the director of Play Market. Anna's background is in theatre performance, direction and producing, and she was the founding producer of Massive Theatre Company. Anna is committed to the development and sustainability of cultural and creative life for all New Zealanders. Welcome, Anna.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Thank you, Dalina. Kei te pēhia koutou. I'm sitting here in my home in Auckland. I'm in a room that's sort of tacked onto the side of our house. It's sort of a shed-like situation. Thank you, PANS, Auckland Live, and The Big Idea for holding these hui. I'd like to acknowledge all of the speakers who have shared their wisdom. There is such a collective richness from our sector to draw upon at this time. I salute my fellow panelists this morning and I look forward to our kōrero. Having catapulted into level one, our topic today is who is ready to move, who is doing what. For this hui, I've been asked to represent Auckland Theatre Company in my role as Executive Director. This morning I'm going to tell you what ATC is up to. I'll spend a little time talking about the online space and I'll round off with some thoughts about being an employer at this time and share some thinking about the company of the future. In order to look forward, we've got to look back. So I'm going to dip back into level 4 rahui to explain some of the ways that we have been able to keep moving during this precarious time. I was really struck by Pōwai Cairns from Te Papa, who spoke some weeks ago at one of these hui. Pōwai talked about this being the age of precarious, and she underscored the need and the importance of moving at the pace of our most vulnerable. And her thinking has really stayed with me, and I've been turning those ideas over. So if you're there, Pōwai, we don't know each other, but thank you. You've given us a lot to think about. American science fiction author Octavia Butler says, "All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change. God is change." Already the past 6+ weeks spent at level 4 feels like the distant past, such as the rush back to level 1. As level 3 and level 4 took hold, ATC cancelled the remainder of Stanley Makue's play Black Lover, which was playing a sellout season at Q Loft. We pulled our touring company off the road halfway through a North Island tour of Roger Hall's Winding Up. We cancelled 4 of the 7 shows in our 2020 main bill season. We cancelled our creative learning, youth arts and new works programs, and we closed the ASB Waterfront Theatre. The ASB Waterfront Theatre is a 675-seat venue. It's located in Auckland's Wynyard Quarter, and it's the theatre that ATC built and opened in 2016. As Level 4 craziness ramped up, we were very fortunate to be able to respond to a fantastic idea put forward by theatre director Eleanor Bishop for an online Zoom adaptation of Chekhov's The Seagull, co-written by Eleanor Bishop and Eli Kent. It took us 2 weeks from Yes, We're In to the first episode, which aired on Friday the 8th of May. The creative team who put this together were brilliant in every way, and the result was true innovation of the theatre form using a current online communications platform. Both critical response and audience engagement confirmed that The Seagull was a very successful collaboration. Audience engagement over a 5-week period saw 33,200 views of The Seagull. Now, as a hypothetical comparison, I've just been doing this little exercise. If we ran The Seagull at the ASB Waterfront Theatre for a 5-week season, let's say at 6 shows a week, so that would be 30 performances of the work, and if we sold that season at 100%, that would be 20,250 people. The online Zoom version of The Seagull achieved a 64% increase in audiences in my hypothetical comparison. And that's based on a hypothetical comparison at 100% and 30 live shows as a season, which is something we would never do in the current climate or potentially ever. So we're still very much unpacking what this recent online experiment means. And I'm just going to dwell on this topic for a moment. The debate about how to protect, value and monetize our art on screen is firmly at play. I think the seriousness of this debate is perhaps yet to be grappled with, because this is very new territory for many artists and organizations whose livelihood is built on the live experience. As we ready ourselves to develop new business models, it feels as though
we're in a place of experimentation and discovery right now. And perhaps we would do well to stay here for a bit longer, give ourselves space to test ideas, build trust with new audiences, start new conversations about online engagement, learn from each other, and test out what feels right for our brands. In a level four context, with the National Theatre of Great Britain offering their plays for free online, and it being the very first online production that ATC has produced, The Seagull was offered free for global public consumption on YouTube and Facebook, and all four episodes can be viewed until the 3rd of July. I'm going to move on now to some of the other things that we have planned for 2020 at level one. In the mode of repurposing, ATC Artistic Director Colin McColl is currently rehearsing the Master Builder Company to produce a filmed studio version of this Ibsen classic for distribution online. Last week, we announced a Back on the Boards Spring Mini Festival at the ASB Waterfront Theatre for September, featuring D.F. Marmier's celebratory work, Still Life with Chickens, with Goretti Chadwick and Hans Fa'avai Jackson, directed by Fasitoa Amosa, and a return season of Stanley Makuei's Black Lover with Cameron Rhodes and Simba Rashi Mache, directed by Roy Ward. There will be further announcements around a new third piece to complete the Back on the Boards Festival trio. We are proceeding with our November production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, directed by Shane Bosher. Awesome. Our creative learning team, under the leadership of Associate Director Lynn Cardi, has been really busy repurposing the year's work to keep engagement high with schools and the next generation of theatre makers. Our youth arts coordinator, Mile Fane, developed and led a project called 100-ish Word Plays, and it invited submissions from young writers to have their work published on Instagram, and we were absolutely swamped with submissions. Our new works team, under the leadership of literary manager Philippa Campbell and artistic director Colin McColl, have continued to work with playwrights and theatre makers to keep the development flame alive during this time. We had the pleasure of working with the North Island Venue Consortium of four theatre venues in Hastings, Hamilton, New Plymouth and Tauranga to tour Roger Hall's Winding Up. And we're continuing to have conversations and investigate touring possibilities with the Venue Consortium for this year and for next year. And fortunately, it seems appetite for touring seems to be returning and conversations are on the go again for other works. As part of our operation at the ASB Waterfront Theatre, we work with a range of arts partners, including the Auckland Arts Festival, New Zealand International Film Festival, Royal New Zealand Ballet, New Zealand Opera, Pacific Dance New Zealand, New Zealand Dance Company, Black Grace and Footnote, as well as a range of other partners. We also work with a range of corporate clients who conduct events at the theatre. And I'm pleased to report that the phone is starting to ring again and planning is underway once more. We all have a very challenging 2021 ahead, as we pick up the pieces of our respective crystal balls and glue them back together to try and predict what audiences will do. How will people respond to live theatre once again? 2021 also brings some large-scale goodness back into the economy and the events landscape with Te Mata Tini, AC America's Cup 36, AC 36, Women's Rugby World Cup and APEC Leaders Week. It feels like a big part of level one is about reconnection, re-emergence, showing up for each other and connecting with purpose and intention, perhaps our days of meetings for the sake of meetings are coming to an end. The final part of my presentation today is around supporting people through change. Throughout COVID, I've had many conversations with sector colleagues about the responsibility and the challenge of being an employer at this time. And there are so many aspects to this, but in short, how do we create the best environment for our teams, our partners, and the sector so that the business of the arts and our artists working on all levels can thrive? I've been asking myself, what will theatre do amidst this very complicated context? Globally, we are working through a pandemic, a race relations crisis, and the issue that defines our planet right now, climate change, is evolving daily. Nationally, many organisations are moving through structural change, and we are all repurposing ourselves and our businesses and finding ways through. Our professional and personal lives have become intertwined in new and challenging ways. Our communications technologies and the sheer range of platforms may be exhausting us. The interdependencies of our physical, mental, cultural, spiritual, and societal well-beings sees us needing to put on our own oxygen masks first, whilst simultaneously looking after others. Some initial practical things that we've been able to do at ATC are to establish an employee assistance program for our staff and for all of our creative teams, contractors and casuals who work with us. ATC employs hundreds of people throughout the year. This service offers free, confidential, 24/7 counselling support, as well as a range of other services. In the same breath, we joined together with the New Zealand Festival Comedy Trust and Auckland Live to support the wider arts sector to have access to the Music Helps Wellbeing Service, which is available now to anyone working in the arts in Aotearoa. Lockdown forces retreat, a bizarre hibernation, qualities of being insular, introspective, quiet, yet still an impetus to show ourselves to each other and open up new conversations with people that we've been meaning to talk to for the longest time. As we open up again and re-engage and present ourselves once more to the outside world, there is a new importance on mindfulness and consciousness and language to co-create our new world together. The scarcity of resources is upon us now. So how we use our human capital is critical. The world is asking us to become more adaptable, more flexible, more nimble, more resilient. And we want choices with that and simpler strategies to make our well-being a priority. I've been engaging with the work of a couple of Danish designers, Lars Kaaland and Jacob Borte, who, together with 10 writers, gathered in Budapest 8 years ago to write a book in 1 week. And the book is called Unboss. And it speaks about the company of the future will be an unlimited movement. Today, knowledge, purpose, and collaboration, rather than hierarchy, competition and a bottom line only focus make the difference between success and failure. The Unboss idea is that businesses must first and foremost be useful. They must become movements that change the world. Of course, the humanities have been doing this for centuries, and we are perfectly positioned, if not a little disrupted, to keep on unlocking the true potential of the arts, but leave behind the non-useful and the non-relevant. Chief Executive Officer of the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco, Deborah Cullinan, says, "The intersections of relevance is where the great art lives." In his poem, The Art of Walking Upright, Glenn Colquhoun says, "The art of walking upright here is the art of using both feet. One is for holding on, one is for letting go." Nō reira, tēnei te mihi aroha ki a koutou katoa.
Kia ora, Anna. E mihi ana ki a koe mō tō kōrero. What a beautiful way to start the panel this morning with that amazing kōrero. I'm struck by what you're saying about co-creating the new world and the idea of the unboss, the non-hierarchy, the unpatterning that we can do, the reshaping and reforming that we need to do in collective ways. But boy, can that sometimes be hard when you're coming up against the conditioning, you know, the long-standing conditioning of the way that we function and operate as businesses, as art structures, the processes and policies that we've put in place can be very difficult to change. And it is wonderful to hear your thoughts on that, as perhaps we're moving to a time where our true values in the world can come to play, the values of freedom and change and liberation. So thank you very much, Anna, for your kōrero this morning. I'd like to introduce our next panellist this morning, wonderful friend of mine, Tane Mahu Tigray. Tane is currently the kahukura Kai Arataki Toi, the CEO and Artistic Director of Takirua Productions. And he also recently held the role of Kai Rautaki Māori Strategic Advisor Māori for Tawhiri and the New Zealand Festival of the Arts. Tane Mahuta has 26 years of professional experience as an event producer, theatre director and choreographer of over 25 events, festivals and productions, including the Oceania work at the Shanghai World Expo opening ceremony. He has guest choreographed the South Pacific Aotearoa section of WOW, World of Wearable Art, since 2010, as well as co-produced and artistically directed New Zealand's largest scale bicultural productions, including Maui, One Man Against the Gods, Aroha Nui, The Greatest Love, and Tiki Tane Mahuta. Tane Mahuta spent 5 years performing for the Argentinian aerial theatre company De La Guarda in London, Las Vegas, Buenos Aires, Amsterdam, Berlin, Seoul and Sydney, and in 2018 choreographed a Broadway musical workshop lab of Otherworld in New York. Kia ora and welcome, Tane.
Kia ora tōlena, nā mihi anō ki te whānau whānui i tēnei wā, pirangi ki te tūtai, ki te mi, ki o matu te kore, i o te wānanga, kia rangi nui rawa ko papa atu anuku, a me hoki nātu i runga rawa, i tēnei wā, pirangi ki te mihi ake, kia rātou nā tini mate, nā tini aitua i tēnei wā, i roti te wā o te mate urutā, o te mate korona, haere, haere, haere atu rā, e moi mai rā. Puti ono tātai hono tohonga mate, hoki kia rātou. Aptuno tātai hono tonga ora, ki tonga ora, ki te whānau whānui o PANS, Auckland Live, The Big Idea, Aukanei kai kōrua i tēnei wā ko Anna, me hoki ko Michael, kei te mi ki a kōrua. Kia ora te whānau, it's a wonderful opportunity to come and share in this wonderful wānanga that PANS and Auckland Live have been hosting over these weeks while we've been in lockdown and now into Alert Level 1, and what a journey it's been for us all. For me, where am I? I'm in my kind of lounge dining room at the moment. That's been my home bubble space. We call it Puwangiangi or our Korapipu. In behind that space, got a little bit of redecorating in our whare here. So taking it from a bit of a 70s feel into a little bit more modern look. So we're still in the middle of that process, which is lockdown's been really great to get ahead of that. So it's been wonderful for us. What I wanted to do was share with you some of the processes that Takirua have been doing from level 4 and then moving to level 1 with our core business activities, our outreach to our communities, and also the kaupapa of bringing back ourselves to live performance. Just to start off with, I thought I'd share with you that right actually from the outset, we had quite a strong, for me and my team at Takirua, had a strong commitment to believe that we'll be presenting live again in 2020. After and really had a lot of hope in our country and our team of 5 million that we would make the steps in advancement to do that. We're a live performance theatre company. Kanohi ki te kanohi, face to face. We make massive impact in the whole order and well-being of our communities when we're with them. And we didn't want to divert completely our energy into just an online process on that front. So our whakaaro was pushing hard on that. And I know Rachel Mazza from Ilvidgery had the same thinking on whakaaro as well. So it's been interesting sharing those thoughts with our Indigenous theatre makers and our brothers and sisters in Canada and Australia. For us, opening up in level one has started with opening up with Taho Kāinga. Taho Kāinga is our hub, our Māori space, which has a rehearsal space and also offices. In that time of Taho Kāinga being opened up, we've had Tawata Productions and The Conch and ourselves opened it up together. And then we've now also got Taho Tutu, which is a producing house of young producers and emerging and established producers presenting their works. And at that stage, I want to acknowledge Nancy Brunning, of course, not with us anymore, but she was one of our Hōtutu whānau with Hāpai Productions in that space, alongside Ina Daniels, Helena H.J. Kilkelly, and then also Mitch Tuffy Thomas. We've also had the Māori Sidesteps and Tikapa, Jamie McCaskill in the space as well with us at the Hōkāinga. So we've had a lovely hub experience of Māori production companies, and then also the Performance Arcade has spent some time with us. And lots of the community in the last 4 years have been with us and using it as a rehearsal space as well. So having that community space closed down in level 4 has been a challenge, a real challenge. But on the other front, it's also provided us opportunities to realise that we can work from home and that we can work successfully from home in our little home bubbles. And that process, once we got to alert level 2, though, we really wanted to be able to open up for our office leases to be able to get back into their offices to Hōkāinga. And it had quite a series of just the practical elements for opening up again in a COVID environment. So for Te Hōkāinga, we worked it. So we had two staff on every day, opening up from 10 to 4 o'clock. And as part of that process, we've got a whole contract tracing system in Te Hōkāinga, and this will utilise onwards because it's useful to have this for earthquakes, for any other emergencies that may happen. We know who's in the building and we know who's not. So that's been a nice perk for us to have that set up and established, and also to know who in the whānau is coming in. And when new whānau come into Te Hōkāinga, we can get their connections and who they are and build our whānau broader and wider. It's just stronger hygiene practices. We had started this before we got into lockdown anyway, and because in the process of when COVID came through, we were in the middle of our Te Reo Māori season tour, which we did 2 weeks of the 5-week tour before we had to bring that down in the middle of the Auckland Festival. And then we also had to cancel developments of shows for our Te Reo Māori season for 2021 because it was over the COVID lockdown period. But our main focus within Te Hōkāinga and our teams was to see if we could get our shows back up and live and really employ the biggest amount of contractors that we do and look after it with Takirua. So in terms of Te Hōkāinga, stronger hygiene practices, putting protocols in place, right down even to we stopped using the dishwasher. And so everyone who used their dishes finished it, dried it, put them away. So it was all set for the next person to do it. So it was a way of manaaki, looking after the space for the next person, so that the hauora ki ngā tangata, health for the well-being of our people, was always set up in place. So trying to put that dynamic in the space so that everyone was preparing it for the next person to utilise and keeping it clean and ready for those practices to keep ourselves healthy and safe. An exciting time now that we've actually got our first activity happening this coming Wednesday with the Arts Wellington. I've got the action plan agenda that they're promoting, so that'll be presented at Te Haukainga. So that'll be our first time with a bigger group of people, so that's going to be really exciting for us to be able to manage that next process. We're in Alert Level 1, but it's where's the confidence of our community? That's the big challenge, I think, that we're all discovering now as to how open are our audiences and our communities as we go into live performance. So that's a very exciting time for us at Te Haukainga that we've got there. And then in a week and a half's time after that, we start our rehearsals for our first contracted show was Sing To Me, written by Alex Lodge and directed by Midiyama McDowell. This show, we continued right through lockdown. So working with the creative team of Jane Hakaraya on set and lights, to Uta Hoskins, who's our costume designer, and Dai Butler, our sound designer, we worked through the whole design element with Midiyama and the team to keep that show going forward. I was in a partnership with Centrepoint to present in July, early July. We obviously were in a place where we couldn't commit then, and neither could Centrepoint to be ready and open at that stage. So what then we did is readjusted our budgets and just looked at, we're looking at rehearsals for the show and making sure that the actors, Kali Kōpai, Scotty Cotter, as well as the creative team, work is being created, developed and ready in preparation for touring next year. So it's exciting that we can keep these shows on the ball, building ready for future touring. For us in the rehearsals, the protocol is how do we build a hauora, a safe environment for those who are rehearsing in the building, who are going to be in much more closer proximity potentially than those just in the offices, in the office space, and the physicality that happens with rehearsals. And I think the elements for us was that had that thought of creating a rehearsal bubble of our whānau in there, and that bubble just been really aware of where they go to when they are in their external time out and what they're bringing back into that bubble as well. Even though we're in a place where it's all no limits now in terms of that space, it's just been really aware so that contract tracing wise, we have everything in place to know where we've been, what we're doing. There's that key responsibility because New Zealand has done an incredible job. It's just so amazing how we've eradicated the virus. So I think in 3-4 days, we'll have if no more results, 28 days, we'll be at full eradication, which is such an impressive feat to achieve when you look what's happening around the world. And it's because of that that we're in a position to look at opening live as well, which is really exciting. So for us, it's how do we just keep it so we have that space strong, safe, and build that confidence for then our audiences to come through. Our other thread we have is our Te Reo Māori season. This is the show that we tour to schools and kurukaupapa all around the country. And this show is where we reach thousands of our tamariki and our rangatahi and keep Te Reo Māori alive and well for our communities, mainstream and kurukaupapa to share. We're doing Ngā Manu Rōreka, which is written by Apirana Taylor and translated by Matiroa Hainga, and directed by Wanita Hepi from down south. So the connection with Michael and their little Andromeda whānau, because Wanita does some work with them too. In terms of this process, we've been working, we worked from even before COVID really became a big issue. We knew it was going to be an issue from January. So, and we knew as a team of five touring around from school to school that we could be an infecting hive, going into hive to hive to school. So we really felt that we were going to be a potential challenge for that. First phase for us in that was a process called taupāruru. Taupāruru is a process of when we have pōwhiri with each other, we hongi, the greeting with the nose, shake hands, and the exchange of breath, which obviously in a COVID-19 scenario is complete infection spreading in a big way. So what we then put into place with advice from Mana Whenua, who made the call that taupāruru, an element of pōwhiri, was to happen with no hongi, no exchange of hands, just arrival at place. So that was put in place over the COVID period, and we had that experience come through with the New Zealand Festival of the Arts pōwhiri, where we had hongi for the first two and then taupāruru for the third hongi onwards. The process for that for us is just keeping our community and our cast all safe. Even though we're in this alert space and Te Atiawa, Taranaki whānau, we have now provided the opportunity for taupāruru to stop and people to do hongi again, but they've also said the commitment is kei a koutou te tikanga. It is up to you whether you feel safe yet or not to do that. And we do feel, as we're going from school to school and community to community, that it's best in this light for the rest of the 2020 tour that we do not do taupāruru in that phrase. So that was the first part of our hauora policy. The second element for us is because we'll be going to schools from the 20th of July, and what's been fantastic is 75% thus far of the schools have said, yes, we do want you coming back, which is a real confidence boost for us, mainly because we had 23 school shows cancel in 2 days when we were right in the middle of Auckland Festival, which was the writing on the wall of the end of the rest of the tour, and then the alert levels moved to level 3 and level 4. At least there is that confidence and a need coming from the teachers. We believe that this is good for their tamariki, the rangatahi, with the journey that they've had to have live experiences. But part of our process is to make sure that we've got a 4 to 5 metre gap from where we perform to where the students are sitting to experience the show, to try and create those distances, those gaps, again, because we have that potential to be a hive going into another hive. For us, it's the also promoting strong hygiene practices within our whānau and making sure that we are as clean and practical in our safety hygiene practices as possible to make sure that we're touring from school to school as safely as possible. We also undertake main stage touring, and the Sing to Me presentation at Centrepoint, obviously we've had to cancel, so we're looking to go straight into touring with that next year. But we have the potential to do Pohutu, which is our main stage touring kaupapa. And it's an interesting position, this one, because we're in a situation where financially the gross box office income and the other resources that are available through Trust and Foundation have really diminished massively, as is sponsorship and that. So it's a very different environment to what to then be able to continue effectively to make live stage work and touring work, which is expensive to do, getting it out to our regions and our communities. So we're in a place where we're still waiting on results to see if that's possible or whether we will be forced to postpone that to next year. So it's the element of a lot of us, the production companies, are having to work through how do we navigate the multiple pathways and plans, plan A, B, C, and D, and different scenarios of how can we make work happen and how do we also look after our artists in that process. And that's an ongoing dialogue. And it's not easy. I can definitely attest to that. And you feel the heart of so many of our freelancers who their livelihood is this. And if they're not performing or not presenting stuff, that's a big part and chunk of their livelihood gone. So that's a big responsibility on us tōtara and kahi katia. For us, that's been a big part of our hauora, kinga tangata, for our contractors, is our commitment, as with CNZ's brilliant moves of the emergency relief funds that they've been providing for artists, for the activity and new programs and ideas, and then support for tōtara and kahi katia, to make sure that up to the 30th of June, we honour all those contracts. So those artists who were committed through contracting, regardless of whether it happened or not, we're going to be paid and supported through that. So that's been a big kaupapa and awesome kaupapa for us to continue in that advocacy and support. Other elements which we've been doing with Takirua is really getting to work with our other Māori organisations, theatre and dance. So Atamira, Tawata Productions, Delina, of course, who work at PANS and Auckland Festival, Te Pō, Te Pai Rāwhiti Festival, Tama Waipara as well. All these whānau have been working strongly together to really work out how can we outreach to our artists and provide A, the knowledge of what funds are available in terms of the MSD subsidy, wage subsidy, plus also the CNZ relief grants, and then also what support can we give to our artists to know about what's available, but also whakawhanaungatanga and manaaki. How do we uplift and look after our whānau and keep those community links there? And in that process, we re-established He Waka Urangi, which is a kaupapa that Nancy Brunning set up back out of the National Māori Theatre Hui, and that's talking to different regional leaders around the motu just to get a sense of how are different regions coping within Māori theatre right across the motu. So we can get a bit more data, a bit more information of how people are doing from directly from the mouths of those who are leaders in those areas. We also had artist catch-ups, which we all balanced in our timetables between Atamira Dance Company, Te Pō, ourselves at Takirua, Tawata, to be able to really make sure that our communities that we're working with are had that chance to whakawhanaungatanga touch base through our Zananga Zui, our Zoom. It was just fantastic that way that we were able to keep in touch with our teams via Zui and realise that, yes, it's not face-to-face, but you still can create a lovely connection even in this new environment that we're in. So that was really exciting for us to know that. And then also just advocacy lobbying. Had an opportunity with Meg Williams to lobby for more funding from the government for 26 more million is what we were lobbying for. And we got 25 million. So hopefully that helped in us getting that across the line from the government. And we know more will be needed to allow the arts to navigate through this next phase. But I think we've been well looked after by the government more than I've seen since 20 years ago with Helen Clark's recovery package for the arts. The thing for us in terms of wanting to get live performance up was a big thing for me is just the ecology. I have certainly heard that production and technical production companies have had to let go of a lot of their workers and are down to very small kaimahi workers nowadays and employees. And so for me, one of those personal elements is getting back into live allows our lighting companies, our tech companies to have at least other clients helping them, keep them and trying to keep them alive and trying to get through the hub. One of my thinkings as a potential that could happen is in the success that New Zealand's had, we may get a lot of films coming over here. I've heard 40 films are considering coming, the option of coming in and shooting in New Zealand, which would be amazing for the work that artists can have and continue work. But also it's a challenge for the live theatre industry because a lot of our talent will go to places where they can be better paid, better supported. So it's for me, it's that element of how do we become resilient and robust and also work with the emerging talent so that we build a bigger bubble of stronger work, stronger opportunities for our artists coming through. But I believe the well-being that this country has created will actually become the best part of building our economy. People will look to want to come and live in New Zealand, build work in New Zealand because they can't do that in the States. Hollywood, I believe, will be closed for a year and a half or two, the way things are going. So I think the opportunities are significant and exciting for Aotearoa, for New Zealand. Just wanted to finish off with just the digital connections. So we decided not to put any shows online, live or existing shows, except for our Te Reo Māori season from 2016, mainly because we didn't have the quality of footage to be able to do that. So we made that a call not to do that at this stage. It does mean that in our plannings, we'll make sure that we do have good quality footage and not just archival footage that we can put up on that as an opportunity. But I did also have questions about if everything's going out for free, where do we move here? Because this mistake that the press have made in terms of providing online free articles and press articles has meant a lot of them are struggling nowadays as well. So how does the arts navigate that? And there was a good article I read on the Arts Aotearoa COVID-19 site on Facebook that discussed that point. And that's the conversation. This is what Anna mentioned, is what we're needing to be having now. But for us, we thought, there's a nice way to connect into people's bubbles, people's homes. So we created a process of te reo i te kāinga. So what language can you use, te reo Māori can you use in your home bubbles, in your home situations that you're working from? So our new marketing coordinator, Kai Whakatairanga Taylor Terekia, led that for us. We've also got Māori games, Ngā Kōruru, like Knucklebones and that coming through on online offerings as well for our rangatahi to be able to have fun with us in a whare tāpere process of amusement games, being able to provide those options for our tamariki. We've also been able to keep our te reo Māori classes alive via Zui, and Peter Kirikiri, our tutor, has been able to maintain our intermediate, advanced and beginner classes. And it's been lovely being able to stay in touch with those who would normally come to Te Haukainga for classes with us, to be able to do that by the Wānanga. So that's been great. And then just those Zui Zānanga and the Zui Hui that we've been having with our artists, our contracting teams, just keeping people connected and getting the element of a continuity of connection and that works are progressing forwards. I think that's the confidence that we've been needing to really make that work strongly. But in the end, it's going to be confidence. How do we make sure that we are working with our theatres that we're looking to partner with? What's the numbers that we want to be able to create inside a scenario where they feel as an audience there's enough space within those places, and we build that confidence back to being able to share in live theatre and have that full energy that you have, which is you can't experience on screen, of being inside a theatre space together with your audience, the show, the performers, and the messages that can really resonate so strongly in that the platform that we love. So that's our next part of the journey, and we're really looking forward to trying to navigate that process. Nō reira, kia koutou katoa. Nei te whakatauki o te wā, e hari te toa takitahi, engari he toa takitini ea. It is not the thoughts of just one that's going to make it. It's going to be the thoughts of us and the mahi of us all working together that'll help us navigate this through. Together through COVID-19. Tēnā koutou katoa.
Tēnā koe, Tane. Thank you very much for that rundown. Amazing to hear about all of Takirua's many varied activities. Fantastic to hear that you're about to be back in the studio developing and rehearsing your new work, and that your tour is able to go ahead later this year with Ngā Manu Rōreka, your Te Reo Māori season. Really, fingers crossed for you that you're able to start touring your other work as well, because as you point out, that whole ecosystem of the venues and the theatre companies, we're all going to be relying on each other to be able to bring the activities back to life across the arts sector. I'm feeling hopeful seeing the numbers of people that were out and about to the rugby matches on the weekend, that people will feel the appetite to be regathering to come to the theatres as well. But of course, there's many other things that are at play, such as accessibility, ticket price at this time of a recession, and then, of course, the ability for all of us to find the funding to be able to present the work. Thank you, Tane. Also, I really just wanted to acknowledge the thinking and thought process that you have put into Hauora for the tangata, for the well-being of your people, the systems and processes that you've thought of and developed during level two within your plan A to Z plans, and the things that you're going to continue and take forth into level one and just ongoing with your practice. Also just referring to the leadership that you said that Te Atiawa showed in terms of the hungi, and of course it was amazing to see the iwi leadership around the country in terms of looking after the hauora of all of the iwi at this time as well. Now I'd like to introduce our final panellists for this morning. Really wonderful to have Michael Bell here from Little Andromeda in Ōtautahi. A little bit about Michael. Michael started the Orange Studio, which is a recording studio and joint venture performance venue for artists in 2006. New Zealand Playhouse, which tours theatre into schools around New Zealand and Australia in 2009. And Little Andromeda, a joint venture theatre in Ōtautahi, Christchurch, in 2018, and he is joining us from Little Andromeda this morning. Kia ora, Michael.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me. So I'm in Little Andromeda at the moment. You can see the seats and the stage and lights and so on. I'm just sitting up the back here. And today I'm I guess going to talk about a few things, three things on my agenda for discussion. Number one, just talking about what Little A's been up to for the last month, and what our future plans are. Number two, about New Zealand Playhouse, which is that schools touring group, and kind of the challenges we've been having, and what we're doing, and then just talk more about the challenges we've been having. That's positive, negative. I should have done a sandwich. I already wrote notes now, so I'm going to stick with it. Okay, so Little A, number one. We have actually been open for 4 weeks now. We opened pretty much as soon as level two was announced, and Hands up if you've been to the, I can't see you. If you've been to the theatre, you'll know it's a 100-seat theatre. And what we've done is we pulled all the seats apart and we pulled all the furniture in from the foyer because that was no good in level two. If you guys can remember what level two was like, it seems like ages ago now. But anyway, we had no foyer, just even go straight in, and we just put tables and chairs. We basically like moved the foyer into the thing and created a bit of a cabaret, style setup. In fact, Francis, if we could have slide number one now, please. I can't see it, but I assume that it's up right now. So hopefully you're seeing a theatre with tables and chairs and they're sort of in groups of 10. And I called the COVID helpline because one of the issues is no one really, well, you don't book in groups of 10 to go to the theatre. You can, but like an average group size is like two. So they said it's all good as long as we're tracing who's sitting in each group of 10. So we made these tables. They've been pulled down now, but these table settings. And you basically walk straight in and you scan at the top to sign yourself into a group of 10. And then once you've done that, you scan this one and you put your drink order in and then it'll just arrive to your seat. So it's like a cabaret. And so we did that for the last few weeks until it came level one. And what we found is it actually went gangbusters. I wasn't expecting it, but just all the shows except for one just sold out really quickly, and everyone was just really happy to be back in the theatre. And last weekend at level one, it sold out. So we put the seats out, and we just put it back to our original layout, which is why I can't show you our level two layout today. We could have set it up, but it was easier to put the photo up, so thank you, Francis. One thing I have found is like you taking punts on what's going to happen, and haven't always got it right. One thing, we applied for Creative New Zealand funding to actually make the shows free and to stream them. So now the reason was that if the reasoning was if we're streaming them and it's for free, I was like not confident about that we could make such an amazing stream that you know, people would want to pay for it over Netflix. But I didn't want to de-incentivize people coming out to the theatre. So that was kind of the thinking. Turns out everyone just wanted to go to the theatre anyway, so that didn't really matter. But we did actually see kind of new demographics, like people who are coming in and saying they actually can't ever afford to go to shows at all. So that was one of the, I suppose, successes of doing that scheme. In fact, when we had Little Lay Up in the tent in 2018 as well, we had a number of free shows, and we saw that demographic turning up as well. So I think there is some merit in having free shows, and we've been really careful with the wording, saying this is made free with thanks to Creative New Zealand, so it's not like devaluing it and making people feel like it's always going to be free and things like that. And we're already now moving back to the model where artists are choosing to do the take the 75% because they can sell more tickets than the flat fee would be. So we're kind of transitioning back pretty quickly, but we are kind of tripping over ourselves to get shows up fast. Like, we had our submissions in, and as soon as we knew that we could open, we were like, okay, who can do the show next week? And like, someone had their show written, ready to go next week. And then we had a couple more shows the week after. And, you know, so we're almost back into our programming, all that. So in terms of the streaming, so we put this, if you wouldn't mind putting slide number two up, please, Francis. This is our streaming setup at the back. I'm pretty pleased with it. So we've got webcams all around the theatre and one good camera at the back. And you can kind of put up text and images and videos and stuff over the top, and we've got our live mix going from the sound desk and so on. Now, one thing when we've been asking artists for their submissions for our All Alert level season, which is totally like we're just at level one now, so we're just going normally. But when we were asking for our All Alert level season, we said, what is the difference going to be when like we're not going to just stream your show, like you have to say why it matters, why someone tuning in from home is going to affect how the show happens. So like them interacting on the stream, or for one of them we do like a music quiz, so it's a performative quiz, but we've made an app that people can participate and sort of have teams from home and send the answers in, and we had a competition where they had to send in a video, and then we put the video on the projector here for everyone that was in the theater and so on. So so that's been a real big thing. But I've been finding, ironically, he says on a live stream, that live streaming has been becoming less and less of a thing, because I think people are more keen to get out and about. So we're really not pushing the streaming on our artists anymore. Thank you. I don't know if that slide's still up, but I think we're done with that one now. Oh, the other cool thing about that slide, you see Andrew Keppel, he was drawing, he was doing live drawings over the top of the, over the top of that show and things like that. So we're just really trying to play with what's possible with the stream. And how it can affect the performance, rather than just be a record of the performance. And the plus side, now we've got kind of cameras everywhere, so it's really easy to make recordings of shows now. So even when the artists don't want it streamed, we can still just record it and they can take it away. And so that's kind of another positive to come out of that. So yeah, we've been finding actually so far it's been easy to get the audiences along, but the hardest thing is actually getting the shows back up and running in time. Speaking of which, I think that's enough about Little A for now. Cool. Topic number two. So NZ Playhouse, next hat on. This is my private theatre company. Private as in like, it's not a charity, it's not funded, it's just a an independent organization, and we so we do touring schools. We perform currently to 450 schools each year around New Zealand and Australia, and it's the company we've worked it in a way where we actually make it work with just I guess selling the tickets to the schools. The students pay $5 and we do three shows a day and we make it work. So we got hit pretty hard by, we were just about to start the tour and had to cancel the whole thing. Another punt that I got wrong is we said to all the schools, it looks like there's no way we're going to get to you anytime this year. Tane was right, had a better prediction there. So we rescheduled everybody for 2021. And then last week when Auntie Cindy said that it's just basically do whatever you want, we were like, there's actually not really any reason that we can't get the tour back up and running this year, because we were staring down the barrel of basically another $100,000 of expenses between now and when we could restart the tour, and no income. We had 50 grand in the bank. Like we could not make it through to next April. There was just simply no way. I wrote a letter to CNZ asking for help for groups like this, because it wasn't just me. It was there are a lot of independent organizations that aren't individual artists that get sort of emergency response grant. Is that the one? I can't. Anyway, the wage help, and say a Kahikatea or Tuatara group who has got the investment from CNZ. They're kind of in the middle where we've just got like rent and insurance and vehicle expenses and wages that are going to go after. Well, we don't know how long the wage subsidies are going to go, things like that. So that was a real challenge to us. And we were basically on the brink of, we were going to let the wage subsidy run out and then go, are we are we just going to call it a day? It's been 12 good years. And the issue is we could apply to CNZ for a project funding, but on the previous requirements, we had to have the project finished by the end of September. I really like to think outside the box and be creative, but we just couldn't come up with, like, the way our company operates. We've got a product, we do an original Kiwi play every year. Would we make video our play and give the video to the schools? Would we do like script development for our 2022 tour? We just couldn't come up with something. And I think, and I do have a concern that the requirements for the next round are probably going to be that the project has to be finished by December. Thing is, we're fine now because we're going to get our tour up and running. So we're scrambling to get our tour back up and running for terms 3 and 4. And like Tane, we've also had 75% of our schools so far say that they're going to rebook. So we're all good. And Little A's fine as well. It's a charity. We've got our product fixed really well, I think, within what Creative New Zealand needs to see. So now I'm just concerned for my mates who are still struggling with their independent groups. I did write a letter. I put it on that Facebook group with all the C's and 19 brackets and the dashes and things on Facebook. If you want to read that, you can see it there. I mean, I think it's absolutely awesome that Creative New Zealand is supporting so much in terms of the art, and I just want to keep encouraging that connection of just this sort of independent group who fall off the edge a bit because they probably applied early on, got turned away early on, have to build a track record, fair enough, build the track record, work out that they can actually do the product without the assistance. And so they either go for assistance but it looks like they don't need it, or they kind of don't bother, just kind of disconnected from that whole scene. And in Christchurch, we've kind of got a double. It's in other cities as well, but in Christchurch, for example, we don't have a whole lot of CNZ representation down here as well. So I think there is. I would like to see a lot more sort of connection between independent groups and CNZ, so CNZ can kind of cater more to independent groups when it comes time for making criteria, and independent groups can feel more like they can apply. Because I spoke to a number of my mates here in Ōtautahi saying, you should apply just for the wage top-up. And they're like, oh, but I'm a lighting designer. Like, I'm not an artist. I'm like, no, you totally can. You should. But I think there's a lot of, we need to raise more awareness that people, in terms of artists and connections. So I think I accidentally went into my third point, emerged into there, so that's good. I'm just going to double check my notes. That's everything I had to say. Thanks for bearing with me and all my stuttering and ums and ahs. So that's me. Thank you.
Goodness, thank you, Michael. You made a really good point there about, you know, and a sort of also speaks to how we were talking about the ecosystem of the arts in terms of those organisations who are a vital part of the kind of the scene, but perhaps aren't part of the CNZ funding formula, or have been making their revenue in other ways, who would have been severely affected by the lockdown period where basically we couldn't do anything. Hopefully that's really changed for many of them and they're able to get up and going quickly. But also I do know for some of those independent companies, they're also planning quite far ahead. They would be thinking about 2021, not thinking about what can I do in the next, you know, before 3 months before September.
Literally our 2020 tour, we've been planning for, I think it's 4 or 5 years now, 2016. We started planning this one. Yeah,
so I'm amazed always by the tenacity of those groups who are surviving on the kind of project by project based funding and the amount of work that they do for their audiences, communities, and the artists that they work for. So thank you very much, and also for sharing with us what Little Andromeda, incredible that you've been up, incredible that you've got artists who you can ring up and who are ready to do a show, you know, can you do a show next week? That's really fantastic to know that there's that thriving community happening down there in Ototahi with the artists and what you've built with Little Andromeda. Thank you. I've also got a little note in here from one of our viewers who has commented on your QR codes there, Michael, saying, so clever. Wish that other cafes have done this too, as many venues, bars, cafes, etc., haven't got easy QR contract tracers going on at the moment. So it's a little shout out to you there for,
for your mahi. I'll show you. If you like QR codes, check it. I'm obsessed with them. Check out our bar. We've got QR codes for every. These are all QR codes. These are every step of, like, every task we have to do in the theatre, like rostering or anything.
It's really quite fun. You're our first panelist who's taken us on a walking tour of their organisation while we've been on. That's quite exciting as well for us. Now, I've had a couple of questions come in here in relation to the online live streaming experiences, you know, that both Anna and Tane Mahuta spoke about as well. And I might ask this question to you first, Anna, which is just, could you talk about or elaborate on how you foresee that artists might monetize virtual experiences? Just because the internet has so much to offer for free, how do we place a financial value on an online arts experience? Have you guys been talking or thinking about that within ATC?
Well, I can offer to elaborate, but I don't think I've got any answers. But I do think that the questions that you're asking are what may define, you know, some of the answers going forward. Yes, we're discussing this at ATC. I have to say, though, I have to be very honest, the truth is we've been too focused on settling our business down and getting through the different levels of COVID to actually properly start to grapple with the question of how we monetize our art online or whether we should be doing that. So I don't have any answers, but something I've been enjoying doing is to do some reading online about the original intention of the internet. Now, the internet surpassed its original intention by light years, but if we take the idea that it's about the democratization of space, it's about the democratization of information, I'm quite interested in how we would take some of that accessibility thinking into our physical spaces and what are the conversations and engagement for our audiences that we can create between physical space and online space. It's very difficult to think about how to monetize our art on screen when there is so much on offer for free. And I think, you know, if we think about the approach, I suppose what feels useful to me is intention. You know, as artists, as companies, as organisations, we have to think quite carefully about what our intent for a particular project is, and we have to think about who that may be relevant to. And then how we might reach those people. So what feels true is that, you know, the approach to audience engagement and audience building is so much more layered now and so much more complex. It's a much more complicated marketing and communication strategy to support your project now. You know, sometimes I really like the idea that you would protect the live experience as being very special and unique by not offering anything online. And so you drive people to the live experience.
for other projects, it may be really relevant to draw out some of the stories or some of the kind of really interesting human stories around that project and offer those online. And so we're interested in how the spaces talk to each other and what the strategies might be for engagement. But I think it sits around intention and it sits around engagement. And, you know, I do think the online space can be a great enhancer of the live project or the live experience. There's so much more insight you can give to audiences who may be really interested in the people behind the work. I also really love the idea that more as a sector and more organisations, we might support each other with kōrero online to help drive attendance at live events and vice versa. Those are just a few random rambling thoughts on it, but it's a very, this is the very thing that we've got to grapple with. And I think we all feel that we need some new business models to assist us with how to, you know, how to go forward in this space. I'm really interested in in the next generation and our digital natives. That's who I want to be my boss right now. I want, you know, I'm looking to and learning from and listening to our digital natives who have got a different mindset about this, about the democratization of these spaces. So I think there's a lot to learn from people younger and with bigger brains than I.
Fabulous. Thank you, Anna. And I was thinking about the online experiences I engaged with over the lockdown and that I still am. They really were mostly free experiences. I know the Boosted Live has that platform that would be really interesting for people to look into, and also Trick of the Light Theatre had a very successful performance, which was a ticketed performance, I believe, through Circa Theatre as well. Another question that's come in, which is more about how do we continue to place value on live arts experiences as free arts become increasingly available online and people are often more comfortable consuming in this way? Tani, I might come to you to share some thoughts about this, as you've got your touring and you've done a lot of thinking about how to bring people back to the live experience.
I think it's a really good question here, because we could get into a situation where people do feel safer to want to watch from home, and I think for me, Netflix and YouTube, that coming through, when these elements have come through, they've really shown that that's been a real competition for us, for live theatre audiences. I know when we were selling Maui back in 2005, 6 and 7, and YouTube was only really just coming through, and no Netflix at that stage, we got 60, 70,000 in our audiences over those 3 years. It was just such significant numbers. I'd go back 10 years now to 2016, 17, 2015, when we were trying to sell Tiki Tani Mahuta, much more different story trying to and do that. So there is a massive competition when you can spend $11, $12 for a subscription to Netflix and get really good content, quality materials on that level, let alone the offerings that we've had with, I saw the Jane Eyre, the National Theatre, as part of their offerings for free, and seeing that experience of the show. But for me, it's that whole element that even experienced Jane Eyre and seeing the production values of that show, it didn't give me the live experience, the sitting in the theatre moment, the energy of that audience and around you, of what I love about live theatre. So I think that is very hard to try and create and alter that situation for someone who's not in that space. Maybe there's going to be virtual reality scenarios that do allow that to happen where you feel that. And I know VR's had experimentation and developments, and And then people moving away from it as well. But I just think there's going to be still a core of our audience who want that live experience to be there at the moment, at the time, in that space with the artists. And I think that's something where we just have to have faith that there will be our audiences, our communities who want to have those experiences and want to be a part of something and to say, I was there at that time. Of course, I think when you look at the models of the Met with the opera and the National Theatre as well, how they've... especially with the Met, with the opera, how they worked and did it put in cinemas. So you at least had a very strong cinematic experience of those opera works, and you could go to multiple cinemas all around the world and increase the numbers who were experiencing the show thousandfold to how many would be able to see it in New York. That is a business model that if you've got that capacity, if you've got that quality and you've got that star power that people will come to the cinema to see your work, then that's totally an option. But I think for smaller companies or independent companies, it's going to be actually kind of unique, really quirky, interesting ideas digitally that will bring people in through that space. I've been going to APAM, Australian Performing Arts Market, and other arts markets in the last few years. And it's amazing seeing the different offerings that are happening through people's phones and experiences that you have with a live experience, how that combines. So some really interesting thinking from artists out there to participate in that online phone space as well as the live space at the same time to make ongoing performances viable. I mean, what's been one work I saw, they'd filmed all the work in this house space where you'd then go around the house, use your phone that they provided you and see the different performances that have been pre-recorded through a QR code as to what was happening there. But like when you're going to the museum and getting the history tour, the audio talked about that piece of art that you're there, and it allowed thousands of people to see that performance experience. And if you've got those dancers performing that continuously 1,000 times, they couldn't have done it physically. So it made that a possibility for more outreach. So I think we've just got the element of just being, let's be open, flexible. And I agree with Anna. I think so much of our younger brains and younger digital natives are going to have the answers there. I look at the Mighty Sidesteps and what they're doing. They're set up to go as a digital company and really about to explode because they've put that focus on that process as a company, and they've got the team around themselves to do that. That's been their focus. If you don't have that type of team around you, I would think that's just the contracting with the artists who have that capability to make sure that you've got those different pathways available to providing different appetite for your audiences. But and then just to sum up, I think I don't believe that a live art experience will disappear because we've got free stuff online. And I think there's value in it, and I think people will still pay for that. And they do need to, because that's what makes it able for us to be able to provide income for our artists. Without it, we're actually live theatre is going to disappear on us.
Yeah, thank you, Tani. I think it's quite interesting when you talk about live performance and, you know, our concern about bringing audiences back to the theatres now, but actually perhaps we were already facing that issue in terms of audience development. We were already in some ways struggling with a thriving industry, so many different entertainment options available for people. I'm thinking certainly, especially in Auckland, which has got a myriad of things available on any weekend possible to do. And yeah, I'd like to come to Michael and just ask you in terms of, you know, you've said that your audiences came back, you know, in droves. It was more than you expected. Yeah. What is it about Little Andromeda in terms of your audience that you've developed over time? It sounds like it's a community. Is that how you would describe your audience, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of regulars community is a much better way of saying it. You know, you see people like who see the same people each week and talk to each other at the bar and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I would, as much as I'd like to take credit for the audience coming back to me, I think maybe, I don't know, I'm just theorizing, but maybe it was just everybody being so sick of being at home that everyone just wanted to go somewhere and connect with people. And yeah, I feel pretty at the moment that, that it could have maybe, I don't know, I'm really bad at predicting things, but maybe it's going to turn out to be a good thing, and now everyone realizes how much they like going out to the theater and having that connection with just having, you know, obviously having having that connection with the artist. I'm also really bad at predicting things, but here's another prediction. If I'm wrong, then can we just quietly delete this video? But if I'm right, then let's save it. I feel that artists, like, at the moment, you know, like, we don't earn the same sort of amounts as, like, lawyers and doctors and things like that. But as robots kind of slowly take over everybody's jobs, I think artists are probably going to be suddenly become the last ones actually employed, because, yeah, so maybe, I mean, who knows, maybe the future will be good for artists. Like I say, delete this video if I'm wrong, but...
Thank you, Michael. And actually, on that point, I'd like to come to each of you just for a closing thought about artists. Anna, you talked about that Eleanor came to you guys with an artistic idea, which you picked up for the lockdown. And Tania, you've been talking about how artists have been coming up with such innovative ideas all the time. In fact, they are our change makers. How are you, your organisations, just for a closing thought from each of you, how are your organisations planning to perhaps deal or have relationship with artists in different ways, just from some of your reflections over the time of the lockdown? I'll start with you, Anna.
Oh, I love your prediction, Michael, that artists, we're going to be the last ones standing. Woohoo! I think that's a great prediction. I think this video is going on. look, it's a time for great collaboration between all of us. We're in a process at ATC of opening up our company. We started to work more specifically in partnership with other companies, with Prayas Theatre Company, with Te Rihia Theatre Company in 2019. And ATC, over its 27-year history, has a long history of collaborating with other companies. But I think we're in a new time now where, we have these different technologies and these different platforms that we can use, and our experimentation with the Seagull collaboration showed us that. It was an extraordinary experiment. It was incredibly quick to turn that around to respond to a really fantastic idea. And in that collaboration, we had external artists coming to us to say, hey, how about it? And we put the resource to it and made that happen. The results were really extraordinary, and it was so fantastic to be able to share that collaboration and the success of that collaboration, both for Auckland Theatre Company, but beyond the company, with the world. And we got some international critical response in The Scotsman from that collaboration, which was titled up, you know, what are the five best things to watch on the screen at the moment? So little old ATC was name checked in there amongst Complicité and National Theatre of Scotland and other, you know, really incredible producers. So it was a very proud moment for the whole company and for that company of actors that we brought together. So we're open to more of that. And it's an exciting time. I just wanted to reflect back as well, just to the discussion we were just having. You know, these questions about audience engagement online, they're the same questions we had and we're having before the time of COVID. It's no different. It's just that there's a heavier reliance now and a comfort zone for people participating in the online space. So what we do about that, what we do with it, it's up to us. I agree with Tane. I don't think as an industry, as a sector, it's going to mean that we're having less people to our live performances. I feel hopeful, like we're going to have more, and that our collaborations together as companies, as organisations, and with our artists are getting more interesting, more dynamic, and more complex.
Kia ora. Thank you, Anna. Michael, I'll come to you next.
Well, there we go. I'm muted. Reminded me of another just wee thing on this digital versus theatre thing is just a wee anecdote. May I share an anecdote?
Yes, please. Cool.
Thank you. So over lockdown. So like I'm 32. I'm on TikTok. My workmates feel quite passionately that I'm too old to be on TikTok. But anyway, it is it has got a lot of younger people on, a lot of people on there, and Joe Damon, who is a comedian in Auckland, has I suppose risen to TikTok fame particularly over lockdown, making videos where he's like having chats with Jacinda Ardern and stuff like that, and it's awesome. Now, after lockdown, he's gone and done this tour, so he's doing Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, and he announced it last week, and the tickets, all three centres, just went within an hour. And we'll put more shows on, and they all went like that. So he's got this amazing sold-out theatre tour now, and I think, and yeah, I swear it's thanks to this, you know, TikTok, project he's had going on, just huge following, and so we're expecting, sort of 20 to 22 year olds coming this week. We're going to take all the craft beer out and put RTDs in the fridge, and but I think it's same with like Tom Sainsbury, Snapchat fame, and just really is able to actually transfer that digital, like it's free, but that kind of into theatre success, sales success. So I don't know. That's my anecdote.
Thanks, Michael. That is a great point, and I have enjoyed that comedian's TikToks. I'm not on TikTok, but I've seen them. Someone did a news article.
Okay. I think you should be. It's okay.
Tani, I'll come to you finally, just for a final thought about how's your organisation changing, or what's it changed or learned about ways to perhaps work with artists?
I think the for us, I think it's a good challenge for us at Takedo as well, that in some ways the type of theatre we have been doing a lot has been a little bit, possibly a bit conservative in terms of and safe in the way that standard theatre has been presented. And I think it's put a word to us to be more ambitious in terms of the different types of artistic collaborations that we can play with that go beyond straight theatre space or performance in schools, and how do we bring technology into it. So I think we have been looking at works and potentials for that to come through, but we haven't actually delved into and made that step. But it gives us more confidence to go and do this, especially with the when you do see it. I mean, I follow Tom Sainsbury's too. It's just brilliant. His Snapchats are just so funny and really clever ways. And I've been watching how I'm not on TikTok, haven't got on my phone, but I'm watching my partner's phone and watching the different clips, and just realize, my gosh, the cleverness of people and how to build a community very quickly has been really impressive to see how that works. So I think we could do a lot more in that. For me, it's humor in the digital line. That's where you really get a great growth and connection with so many more people. I think Tyke has showed that so strongly. Mighty Sidestep's the same. That's been a big part of what's really grabbed audiences to come and experience them digitally, and then they'll come and experience their live works or build their brand further, as in Tyke's journey, which has been phenomenal where he's grown too. So I think we can, noting that there's more complexity of what we an opportunity to be more artistically varied in terms of our offerings. That's the word for us. But also kind of noting that there is an element, and I think to Taika as well, when the Untold Tales of Maui was done in 2003, and thinking actually theatre companies do provide a really strong base for people to try their craft, develop it through and grow that base from where people can then launch off into the other career pathways. And and I look at BATS and look at Takitua and Circa and the previous Downstage as well in Wellington, and how those platforms have helped launch a lot of artists' careers in a lot of different directions and ways. So as long as we've still got some strong platforms for people then to launch off and then go their own way, then our arts ecology and Aotearoa is going to always be exciting and really pushing the envelope. So provide that platform, that space for our independent artists to go for it. That'll be a key part of the platform that we want to keep presenting for our whānau.
Thank you, Tani. And that brings us to a close of our hui today. Thank you very much to everyone out there who's joined us, everyone who may be watching this later, and a huge mihi to our panellists from today. Thank you so much, Anna, Tani Mahuta and Michael, for everything you've shared today. Ngā mihi. This will be the last online panel for a little while. We're not going away, but we will be moving to a monthly model. So we will see you next month in July for our next online hui. And if there are any special announcements or any special panels that may happen before then, certainly we will be keeping you informed with the phase two of the Creative New Zealand Emergency Response. And we'll be look forward to having another hui with you all and sharing more information, knowledge and ideas. As you say, Tane, we have a plethora, a country full of exceptional artists, and we're very excited to be at level one, to be able to get back out there and share their work with audiences across the motu and one day, hopefully, again internationally. So I'll close our hui with a karakia. Firstly, just like to again thank Auckland Live and PANS and The Big Idea for their support with these hui, and a shout out to our behind the scenes team of Francis, Heather, Helena and Louise. Ngā mihi ki a koutou. So just to close the session today, a karakia. Me karakia tātou. Kia hora te marino, kia whakapapa paunamu te moana, kia tere te kairohirohi i mua i tō huarahi. Thank you so much for your time today. Tēnā koutou. Tēnā koutou. Tēnā rā tātou katoa. You have been listening to the PANS Online Hui series in partnership with Auckland Live and supported by Creative New Zealand and The Big Idea. For more information, please visit pans.org.nz.